This is Jock Talk, an intimate, in-depth discussion with the best jockeys in thoroughbred racing. Presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
25-year-old Mario Gutierrez, who touched Derby, 1:38.
Digging down for the final 16th under Victor Espinosa.
Joe Calamo in the ride of his life, in the race of his life.
Gary Stevens, 3 Preaknesses.
A brilliant ride by Calvin Burrell.
Up the inside under Johnny Velasquez to take it.
Shanghai Bobby and Rosina Pravnik come again to beat. He's had enough.
Raji Baraj aboard, crushing the field here.
Perfectly ridden by Javier Castellano.
A scintillating performance under Rafael Bejarano.
Now, here's Christina McManigal.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, right here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. I am retired jockey Christina McManigal. I would like to thank everyone joining me tonight on Sirius 220, XM 206, and to those of you tuning into our website, horseracingradio.net. A portion of the proceeds from this show go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. The PDJF provides financial assistance to 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic injuries. If you're interested in learning how to help, please check out the website at pdjf.org. Now, our guest this evening has the kind of comeback story they make movies out of. And actually, he's been in a movie you all might be familiar with. He recently passed the 1,000-win milestone, 1,042 wins to be exact, and his mounts have earned over $17 million in earnings. I'm very, very happy to introduce jockey Joe Steiner. Joe, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Christina. It's good to be here.
So excited about spending the next hour with you. As I said in the intro, your story is incredible. Your comeback story is actually quite inspirational, and really, really excited about this, Joe. Thank you.
Well, thank you. Yeah, it is, hopefully I can inspire others. I mean, I know I'm very fortunate to be back in the position that I am in right now, so.
You have to especially be excited because you've recently been nominated as one of the finalists for the very prestigious George Wolfe Memorial Jockey Award. How does it feel to be nominated for that?
Oh, you know, it's such an honor. I was just blown away when they said I was nominated. It's just something I never thought I'd be nominated for, and to be thought of in that category was wow. And that's another thing that I don't realize, I guess, as I just live my life and go through my journey here, I am inspiring others, and it's been, you know, it's been really amazing to be nominated for that, and to think that, you know, guys are voting for me to be the George Wolfe Award winner. Well, we'll see about that, but just to be nominated is just an amazing honor for me. So
we had the pleasure of having Gerard Melanson on the show last week, who's also a finalist. And this award, I hope our listeners realize how prestigious it actually is. It is voted on by one's peers. Jockeys nationwide take part in the vote, and it is an award that honors riders whose careers and personal character earn esteem for the individual and the sport. And you should be incredibly proud, Joe, to be in this position right now.
Oh, yes, I really am. I mean, I know out of the 1,300, you know, riders that are riding at this point and to be in the five finalists, it's pretty amazing. Like I said, I'm very fortunate to be in this position because I've been through, you know, what I've been through, and we'll talk about that later. But to be here now riding again and just having things going the way they are with positive, the future looking really nice. I'm excited, you know, and to be nominated with these five guys. I mean, these other four other guys, I mean, they're just all amazing athletes and good guys. So, I mean, most of us guys we're like brothers, as you know, as you are a sister. So we're like a big brother group anywhere we go.
That's very, very true, Joe. Very true. And let's Let's begin your story. Tell us how it all began. You were born and raised in Enton, Washington, and you are from a racing family.
Right.
And so tell us your story.
Okay, let's go back a little ways here. My grandfather was a jockey. His name was Jack Leonard. He rode in the 30s, 34, 35. He only rode for a few years, had some weight issues, and became a trainer. My uncle, his son, which is my mom's brother, was a jockey also. And he's the reason, he's the one that inspired me to be a jockey. When I was like five, I looked up and saw him, and I said, that's what I want to do, and that's what I want to be. So, and along the way, as I was growing up in the Seattle area, I was working at Long Acres Racetrack as a groom and working with the horses for my grandfather. And I met Johnny Longdon when I was around 12. And he said, once you learn how to ride, you come down and see me. And sure enough, I was 15 years old, made my way down to Santa Anita, and ended up working for Johnny Longdon. And he took me under his wing and taught me all he could teach me, and I started my apprenticeship under him because he had my contract. I rode my first winner for Jude Feld. He put me on my actual first two horses. Well, actually, probably first three. And then Johnny rode me after that. So I was very, very lucky from the start. I won my second race, which was for Jude Feld, and my third race I won also at Santa Anita. Ended up being the second leading apprentice in the nation the next year behind Declan Murphy. And then I rode around the Southern California circuit, and it got a little salty, a little tough after I lost my apprenticeship. So I ended up going back to Omaha, Nebraska, and was stable rider for Wayne Lucas. And I did really good back there. I met Mike Smith. We were both young guys back then, 18 years old. And it's amazing some of the history that I've come across, the guys that I've crossed paths with through the years. But and from there, I ventured up to Seattle and rode at Long Acres and ended up being second leading rider up there. And throughout the years, I've been back and forth through the Northwest, down to Southern California, and then riding Northern California. And then I ended up in Kentucky for 5 years, riding back there. And I went back for Brian Mayberry and ended up tied for fifth leading rider at Keeneland 1 year with Julie Crone and Jose Santos.
Wow.
That was a lot of fun. So,
well, I have to say, Joe, at five, you knew you were going to be a jockey. I don't remember what I was thinking at the age of five. So that's a very, very early start and very early to decide exactly what you want to do. And what an incredible experience with Johnny Longdon. What an incredible mentor to have. And what was it specifically that he taught you in those early years?
Oh, when I was with Johnny, you know what? He was always trying to just instill the things to stay away from, you know. He said three things to stay away from: girls, drugs, and alcohol. And I said, okay. So this, you know, I was pretty much a very impressionable kid. I was living in the tack room for him, you know, in his barn, and I just stayed to myself, and I just did what he kind of told me. I was just started out riding with, you know, for him. And the main thing he tried to get across to me was saving ground and saving your horse. So having patience, you know, he actually was a very much of a speed rider. So, but I have my own style. We do that as we all start riding, you develop your own style as a rider. So, but I'm more of a patient type rider, but I'm good on the speed horses also.
As long as they win, right, Joe?
Exactly. But yeah, Johnny was, he was just always, you know, pointing out certain things. And no matter if I just won a stake race here at Santa Anita, and I actually won quite a few for him, and he would come down and he'd say, you know what, congratulations, but that was a horrible ride, you know. And he would, you know, and I'd feel horrible after the, you know, ride for him, because that's when he would school me, you know, because most guys would go, that was a great ride, you know, you just won that race. But that's not the way it was. With him, he'd come down, he said, you know what, congratulations, but that was a horrible ride.
Wow.
And, you know, and that's how you learn. And that's how you learn. You need a teacher like that to kind of school you and, you know, and keep you humble and you keep moving forward and never stop learning. You never stop learning. And that's one thing with him, was always trying to, you know, push the point of saving ground, saving the horse. And through the years, you like I said, you develop your own style and your own ways and try to always improve yourself.
Well, it obviously paid off, and very good advice Johnny Longden gave you. Joe, what, when you first began to ride and your family was in the industry, what did your parents think?
You know what? I was very uncomfortable with them seeing me ride because I felt like I wasn't good. And I was always kind of a shy kid. I never let my parents watch me for, gosh, I think they came down after I started racing for about a year. I'd been riding for about a year before they even saw me ride because they were in Seattle and I was in Southern California living in a tack room and racing at Santa Anita and Hollywood and Del Mar. So anyways, time went on. I mean, I was uncomfortable, and then I got more confidence and, you know, just dealing with riding and thinking I was a little bit better as I went along. But they've always been super supportive. Like I said, my mom comes from the racing family. My dad's not a horse person at all. But they've been very supportive. My mom understands because of her upbringing, with my uncle being her, you know, brother, being a jockey all those years, and my grandfather. So I was very fortunate there to have that support.
Absolutely. And Joe, I have to go back to, you mentioned you rode your first winner, Hillside Ruler, at Del Mar for a familiar name, Jude Feld, who is one of our own here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. And I have to tell you, I actually called Jude this morning to pick his brain a little bit about you. And he told me some good stories, I have to say. But he said that before that first winner, and I'll let you tell the story, but he said he had you over for dinner and gave you very specific instructions. Do you remember that evening?
I don't. You know what? The funny thing is I remember certain things from the past very clear, and other things I don't. Maybe I fell on my head too many times. I don't know. But, you know, but I do remember going to his house. I don't remember what we talked about, but he just took me under his wing and was just, he's always been such a great friend. This Jude is an amazing guy, period.
He is.
But what did he say? Because I don't remember. Go ahead and refresh my memory.
No worries, Joe. I tell everyone all the time, I give that excuse. I've hit my head too many times. I understand completely. But Jude told me that you of course, rode your first winner for him because Johnny Longden actually had a heart attack at the time, apparently. So you were planning to begin your career riding for him. Jude put you on a couple horses, and I guess you had ridden Hillside Ruler once before. And
yep.
So he said he had you over to dinner the second time around, and
yep.
Said he made spaghetti because he said you were a scrawny little thing. He wanted to put a little bit of weight on you.
Yep.
And he said, set you down at the table. There was a paper placemat. He drew out a track. And he told you at every point of the race where he wanted you to be. He said you followed his instructions exactly. And, of course, the rest is history. You won aboard Hillside Ruler. But I had to laugh at that story. I thought that was pretty funny.
Yeah, that's exactly what happened. Because the first time I rode the horse, I was on the lead. And I broke on the horse's mouth. I mean, I was just, you know, the funny thing was I was in the starter gate and Shoemaker was next to me. And he looked over and he said, "Hey, Jock, you should have took those braids out of the mane." And I said, "Why is that?" And they sprung the latch and I almost fell off. So I broke that, but then I went to the lead and I was in front at the 16th pole, and the horse just pricked his ears because he was just galloping along. And me, with my no experience of race riding at the time, the horse just stopped into me and I finished fourth. So the next time Jude said, "Let's just wait a little bit longer, have some patience, and then let him run the last part." And that's exactly what he did. He just sat easy, and the last part, shoo, just won the race easy. So it was, and I was like in a, and it was like a dream, you know, it was like a dream. I came back and I couldn't even pull my goggles back on my helmet. I just handed them to Jude in the winner's circle picture. And there it was, just kind of like in a dream. It was amazing.
That's fantastic. Did the jockeys, did they initiate you after that first win?
Oh yeah. They painted me and, oh yeah. And I remember the guys clearly. So, yeah. Yeah, that's a moment you never. That's one thing I'll never forget. So.
Oh yes, oh yes. Yeah. You mentioned Shoemaker sitting beside you in the gate, and just the riders I'm sure you have associated with. Who was maybe your biggest mentor in the early days, as far as other jockeys that took you under their wing?
You know, Chris McCarron was my idol from the start. I think watched him as a character, as his personality and his riding skills, and he's the guy that I wanted to emulate the most. Although I was riding with, let's say, 15 Hall of Famers, the list of riders, of course, you know, Lafitte and Shoemaker, Fernando Toro, Sandy Hawley, Chris McCarron, Gary Stevens had rolled in there a little bit later. It was amazing. Daryl McCarg, these guys are all just amazing jockeys, but that's where I started. So I thought nothing of that anyway. So, but Chris, his character appealed to me the most. And, you know, even to this day, he's my idol. He's just an amazing guy. So.
No, he absolutely is. And I told you when we first started talking, I actually, through a couple people, I started with Chris McCarron whenever I was trying to get your phone number to get you on the show. So Chris was happy to hear you were coming on the show. But what incredible mentors to have. And obviously all of your hard work paid off. As you said, you were second leading apprentice that year. And in 1982, you won the San Luis Obispo Handicap, a grade two, aboard Regal Bearing. Do you remember that race?
Oh, yeah, I remember that race very clearly. I had my choice between two horses for Johnny Longden that day. And that horse, Regal Bearing, if you were ever to see a picture of him, you'd just go, what? He's just stunning, stunning, beautiful horse. He had four white legs up to his knees, and he had a white blaze. And he sat back around fifth position. It was a mile and a half on the turf at Santa Anita. And he laid about fifth, just comfortable, and I just waited to the head of the lane and asked him to go, and he just opened up. Just his stride was from here to the next. I mean, it was amazing. His stride was beautiful. But he's a very inconsistent horse. Next time, he finished dead last.
Oh, no.
But that day, he ran the race of his life, and, yeah, that was my seventh winner of my career at the time. So it was pretty exciting.
That's incredible to have your seventh winner, a grade two. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. And like I said, for Johnny Longden at the time, who was 75 years old at that point, it wasn't a heart attack that he had. It was a neck surgery, and it was a very serious one. They took some chips of bone out of his hip and put it into his neck, and he was going, his condition of health was not good. And after that surgery, it's amazing. He came back to life, and especially along with me, I think being a young guy and inspired, you know, like giving him some life, you know, he goes, I got this kid under my wing and he wanted to help me out and get me going. So it was a really good time for us all. I was very fortunate to be with him. It's just timing. It was just good timing to be with him at that point. He had 25 horses and he put me on all of them. You know, he just stuck by me and just coached me and pushed me. And so I was fortunate, because soon after he only had a few horses. And so it was a good time. It could have been better if it was in the Majestic Prince times. But you know what I mean? But still, I was very blessed to be coming along at that point. So.
Well, and especially, Joe, if that win aboard Regal Bearing was only your seventh winner, you were still an apprentice. Therefore, in a graded stake, you weren't getting the weight allowance. Is that right?
That's correct. Yeah, you don't get a weight allowance when you're an apprentice in the stake race. So I was riding at the same weight. And my other half of my entry was Bill Shoemaker, so that was pretty cool. He was on the other horse named Tahitian King. he finished fifth. He got in traffic. So, but we had a lot of fun. I mean, like I said, it's to ride with those guys back in those days, and you think nothing of it at that point, and until later on you look back and go, wow, that was pretty amazing times.
Of course. And Mr. Longdon rightfully had a lot of faith in you even during your apprenticeship. And you also had a very spectacular win with Kangaroo Court. You remember that horse?
Oh, yeah. No, Kangaroo Court was a little chestnut horse that I used to ride for Johnny that he ended up winning 8 races on him, but and 5 stake races. So he was one of the top sprinters around the Southern California racing circuit, running with mostly the same kind of competition all the time. There was a horse named Dave's Friend at the time, Jack Bamberg trained. He was the first sprinter to earn over $1 million in those days.
Wow.
And there's another horse named Shane Tight, and they always seemed to hook up together. Kangaroo Court was the type of horse would sit back pretty much last and just unleash a monster run on the outside and just run them down. And he would come running. He could run short, long, grass, I mean, anything, but he was pretty much a really good 6.5 was his best kind of race. And he'd usually just get up and win by a nose, or just he seemed to know exactly how to get there. Just a little tiny little chestnut horse that had a heart of gold. And we just had great chemistry. So and it was a lot of fun. It was a lot of fun.
You describe his running style, Joe, and you said earlier in the show that you prefer to be a patient rider. And would you say that kind of running style that Kangaroo Court had, that was maybe your favorite kind of horse to ride, a horse that would come from far back out of the pack like that?
You know what? It's for me now, it's I actually just like any horse that kind of likes to settle and make a nice finish, you know, and that's, I think, what we're all looking for as a rider. Whether you're on the leader or you're coming from off the pace. But I like a horse that will sit off the pace and you can just be patient with them and ask them and just get there the last part. I enjoy that probably the most, but bottom line is we're all looking for the horse that just gives you everything they got, no matter what kind of race it is.
Jockey Joe Steiner joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, you said you went to Nebraska, and then you went to Long Acres, which actually closed, I believe it was early 90s. You remember those days?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Like I said, I was born and raised in Renton, Washington. And so, like I said, I was raised and I groomed at the track up there. And then I didn't ride up there till about 2 years into the season, into my riding career, which was 84. I started riding up there. But the last 2 years of that track, I didn't ride there. So I moved back to the Southern California circuit. And like I said, I've been kind of like a little bit everywhere. I mean, I counted 56 tracks that I've ridden. It's 56 or 60. I mean, I've been to so many tracks is what I counted on that map that shows all the tracks across the country. But
wow.
Anyway, go ahead.
I don't know if I could name 56 racetracks. That is an awful lot, Joe. Wow. Wow. Where would you say, could you pick out your favorite?
Oh yeah. I have picked out my favorite. Santa Anita is my favorite. Keeneland's my second. Out of all the tracks I've been to, I mean, I love a lot about each track. And Santa Anita is my all-time favorite. And Keeneland was my second favorite. And then Del Mar was my third.
All very, very nice racetracks right there. What about, is it true that you rode in Saudi Arabia?
Yes, I did. I rode in Riyadh. And that was the capital of Saudi Arabia. And that was an amazing experience. I rode there in the year 2000. And I had a contract for a guy named Prince Badr, B-A-D-R. And we had 40 horses over there. And I was the rider for all of them. And it was a great experience. I only rode 10 races and I won 2. So, but they only race on Fridays.
Really?
So the Yeah, it was a whole, it really makes you appreciate America after racing there for the period of time. Because like I said, you're there only racing on Fridays, and that's their religious day there. And it's just so different. I found it boring, but the racing bottom line, I mean, just being there for that amount of time was kind of boring, because in between working horses in the morning and then nothing to do in the afternoons, for me, I just, you know, but the racing was really good, and it was surprisingly very safe for an average of 19 horses per race.
Wow.
All the races were a mile plus, and there were probably 7 different nationalities of jockeys in the room, and which all kind of they would hang out in their own categories. We wouldn't kind of mingle together. It would be like the American group was me, Sebastian Madrid, Wigoberto Ramos, and Jose Espinoza. We were like the American group. Unfortunately, I've met these guys when I was riding in Florida, so we felt comfortable together. And riding together was very safe. There was no problems out on the track, and it was very smooth. It was actually fun. It was a European stewards, and very, like I said, very interesting. We were in the city, stabled in the city there, and it was a little bit crazy. You know, it was a little bit crazy taking the horses to the track in the mornings. The grooms would have to, they would ride them to the track, and then I would get on them down at the track after I'd drive in a car to the track, and they'd ride the horses down through the traffic of cars. So,
wow.
You know, it was definitely an amazing experience. And like I said, it was good to be back home after that. But, and I think it's a little bit better now. They have a new track there, which they were just building at the time, and it's in a better location. I think the being stabled right in the middle of the city and having to stop the traffic for the horses to cross and all that stuff, and all that was a little bit crazy for the horses and everybody. And I think it's a lot more relaxed atmosphere from what I heard now. But it was an amazing experience. Yeah.
Was it difficult to keep fit only riding once a week?
You know what? We had a workout thing in the place that I was staying at, so I'm always staying active, so it wasn't hard at all.
Plus,
I was, you know, getting on horses in the morning, working them, and, you know, working with the horses in the mornings, too. So, you know, after you ride long enough, I think you figure out how to keep yourself fit and, you know, what you need to do for yourself to keep yourself in the zone, you know.
We'll continue our visit with jockey Joe Steiner after this short commercial break. Stay with us. You're listening to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Hi, I'm Tito Beveridge, founder and master distiller of Tito's Handmade Vodka, America's original craft vodka. I believe in the craft process of distilling in batches using old-fashioned pot stills, and that's the way we still make Tito's Handmade Vodka today. We even won the World Spirits Competition, double gold, unanimous judge's choice. Tito's Handmade Vodka is made from 100% corn, so it's naturally gluten-free. For recipes, videos, and more, visit titosvodka.com. 80 proof Tito's Handmade Vodka, 5th Generation Inc., distilled and bottled in Austin, Texas.
Get ready for the 3rd annual Jockeys and Jeans charity event to benefit the PDJF, coming to Gulfstream Park on Sunday, February 28th. Last year, Jockeys and Jeans raised more than $200,000 to benefit permanently disabled riders, and you can help make this year's event even bigger. Meet and mingle with an all-star cast of jockeys, including Lafitte Ping Kai Jr., Georgie Velasquez, Pat Day, Randy Romero, and many more. Tickets go on sale at the beginning of January, and donations and sponsorship can be purchased starting December 7th. For more information, visit jockeysandjeans.com. Being a jockey may be one of the more dangerous professions in all of sports. In a split second, you can go from the top of the standings to never being able to stand again. I'm Mike Penna, and over the years, I've had the privilege of talking with many of the top jockeys in thoroughbred racing. And to a person, they will tell you that on any given day, before any given race, when they get a leg up, there's no guarantee they'll return the way they left. It's simply the reality of being a jockey. The Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund does amazing work, providing financial assistance to some 60 former jockeys who have suffered catastrophic on-track injuries. Since its founding 10 years ago, the PDJF has disbursed over $7 million to permanently disabled jockeys. And I'm proud to say that the PDJF is the official charity of the Horse Racing Radio Network. But the only way they can continue helping those disabled riders who have given our sport so much is through your generosity and support. So I encourage you to visit PDJF.org and start making a difference today.
This is CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. First, let's head to California, where Mario Gutierrez had a great week highlighted by stakes wins aboard Frank Conversation in the El Camino Real and Nyquist in the San Vicente. Gutierrez consistently came in the money on 60% of his mounts and finished the week with 4 wins, 2 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Javier Castellano had another good week in Florida by winning 4 stakes, highlighted by the Grade 3 Tampa Bay Stakes aboard Reload. On Sunday, Castellano swept the race 4, 5, and 6 pick 3 at Gulfstream. Castellano finished the week with 10 wins, 6 seconds, and 3 third-place finishes. Mitchell Merle has been riding under the radar at Fairgrounds and consistently came in the money on 47% of his mounts. On Sunday, Merle won 2 out of his 4 mounts, bringing his weekly total to 10 wins, 4 seconds, and 4 third-place finishes. Finally, in Texas, Lindy Wade had a great week at Sam Houston. On Monday, Wade swept the pick 3 starting in race 5, which paid an impressive $808. Wade finished the week in the money on 60% of his mounts with 9 wins, 9 seconds, and 6 third-place finishes. Ride to Win, an inside look at the jockey's craft, is the perfect book for anyone who has wondered what it takes to be a professional jockey. The sport's most prominent jockeys and trainers tell their stories and share their insights on all that goes on behind the scenes. A significant portion of the proceeds go to the Permanently Disabled Jockeys Fund. For excerpts, testimonials, and to order, visit JockeyTalk360.com. This has been CJ Johnson with your Jockey Talk 360 weekly update. For all the latest news in the jockey world, visit JockeyTalk360.com and follow us on Twitter at JockeyTalk.
You're listening to Jock Talk on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka.
They come for the lane, and it's Gold Boom by a length and a half to Jazz Queen, railing up on the inside, looks for room in the center now. Gold Boom in front, tackled by Jazz Queen, the three-year-old filly. Joe Steiner sitting pretty still on Gold Boom. Gold Boom in front, Cat's Thoughts running on down the outside, but Gold Boom is clear. And with a 1,000th win inside, Joe Steiner is going to do this one in style. And back at Emerald Downs, 1,000th win for Joey Steiner. Gold Boom easily. Second is Jazz Queen, third Musical Delight, and Cat's Thoughts was fourth.
Welcome back to Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. Christina McManigal here, joined tonight by jockey Joe Steiner. And we just heard Joe's 1,000th win at Emerald Downs aboard Gold Boom. And Joe, that has to bring back a lot of memories and in the not so distant past, but we'll get to that. And it was a long road to reach that 1,000th winner, I'm sure. But let's jump back into talking about, you mentioned you rode at 56 racetracks, and that's a very large number. I also, when I was doing my research, found a very interesting, very, very large number about you, Joe. You fractured 32 bones. Is that correct?
Yeah, actually 34 by the last figure I counted. But, it was 32. It was 32.
32.
So, yeah, you're right.
Well, that's too many.
Yeah, through the years, it's been, one thing after another through the years, and I would probably guess I would have had 5,000 winners by now, but I spent a lot of time on the shelves healing up. And fortunately, I was able to heal up and feel good again. I mean, after all these injuries I've had, I feel great. I don't have any aches and pains like I know that I probably should have, but fortunately, I feel good.
Well, Joe, if you don't mind me asking, how old are you?
51.
Wow, that's awesome. And 32 bones, that's incredible. That's incredible.
Yeah, it really is. And they all healed up good. I took the time. Doctor would say you need 3 months, you need 4 months. eating properly at that point, and taking the time and not pushing myself back too soon. Fortunately, I'm in really good health for my age and for just for anything, I guess, to heal up from everything I've been through and mentally be in the right place to be still riding. That was, I think, probably the biggest challenge for most guys if they have been injured.
Describe that, Joe. What you mean by mentally right?
Oh, mentally, I mean having the confidence to and have no fear out there riding a horse. And this is the one thing that, like I was telling you earlier, the average career, as I was told for some reason, was 5 years for a jockey. Mostly weight issues and fear. Some guys will ride and be doing great, have a couple of spills, and next thing you know, you lose heart, you're scared, and you're scared out there, the horse feels it, and people see it. So and you have no business being out there at that point. And I've actually only experienced that once in my life, but that was early on, like in around 92, after had a spill in Seattle. I had a lot of broken bones, and I came back from that, and I got back in the game, and I was doing good, and I was second leading rider at Golden Gate Fields at the time, and I remember I won the first race that day, and the second race, my horse jumped the fence, and ended up in the hospital all afternoon, and it turns out I was okay, and the next day, I'm back out on the track again, and I'm going down the backside, and a horse in front of me fell, and I fell down again and knocked the wind out of me. And now, next thing you know, I was in the starting gates right after that. And nowadays, they actually, if you take a spill, they'll actually take you off, or you know, they do a major evaluation. They won't let you just go right back and ride a race, but. I was right back in the next race and sitting in the gates thinking, what if this happened? What if this happens? What if that happens? And scared myself. And I actually had to go, I had to kind of train myself to get back in the right mental place again. I mean, having the confidence and blocking out the fear of it and not thinking about that. And you got to just have a clear mind and a positive outlook when you're out on the horse. So the horse senses all your senses.
Very well said, and they certainly pick up on everything, Joe. And you actually had a really terrible injury in early 2005. Tell us about that.
That was my okay. That's when I broke my neck.
Yes,
I believe. So that one, when I had that injury, that at the time they thought it was my shoulder because it wasn't like I had a broken neck. It was my arm, my left arm. Was very weak and I couldn't lift it, so they thought it was a rotator cuff tear, but as it turned out, it was my neck. Different vertebrae had a lot of problems, so I had to have neck surgery where they put a plate and six screws and two spacers in there. Where after that surgery, I woke up and the doctor said, "Well, the surgery went great, but you're done. You can't ride anymore. Period." And I was like, whew, that was the worst day of my life.
Wow. I can't imagine. I can't imagine that. I just got goosebumps sitting here because I can relate well to that. And that was always my worst fear. And to have a doctor in those words tell you as soon as you wake up, really, I can't even imagine that feeling that must come over you.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's just something I never thought. I would even, you know, because, you know, when I decide that I want to quit, I want to do it when I say, you know what, I've had a great career. I've had a blast. I loved every second of it. And now it's time to move on to the next chapter of my life. And that's how I want to do this. So, but at that point, I was not ready to hear that. I just didn't expect to hear that. So I was kind of It was a tough point. So,
what did you do after that?
Well, after that, I actually started working with the Jockeys Guild and helped them as much. I did a lot of the book work and helped straighten out the a lot of issues that they had at that point, because they just had a falling out with the old manager, Wayne Gertemanian, at the time, and the jock skill was kind of in a bad spot. So fortunately, I had the time then to work with them, because it's just everything was kind of up in the air. I mean, it just kind of was in a mess. So I was able to help out there along with Daryl Hare. He took over and just brought it back and ended up moving back into a good position after this. So I worked with those guys for a while. I got into real estate a little bit. That's something that always interests me. So I got into that a little bit. And then later on, after about 4 years of messing around, you know, just kind of like on off path, not really feeling like I'm having any, that feeling like you have something that you love. I just seemed like I couldn't find it. And, a friend of mine wanted me to help him lose weight, because I've always stayed fit, you know, my whole life, and something I've actually always promised myself, that I'd have a six-pack until the day I die, because my grandfather, when he was riding and when he quit, he just had this big old tummy, and I said, that's never going to happen to me. So a friend of mine was overweight, and he said, I really want to lose weight, and would you help me? Would you coach me? And I said, I will. I said, you got to change your diet. And it's all about diet and exercise, period. So I started helping a friend of mine, and we started going to a gym called Equinox and doing yoga. And actually, when I started doing the yoga and working out and just focusing with him, it actually helped me in more ways than I ever thought. And I ended up feeling better than I ever did ever. And the yoga brings back your flexibility. It aligns your spine. It increases your lung capacity. So I got to feeling so good that I said, I was out about probably 5 years, and I thought, I'm going to get on the pony. And when I hopped on the pony one morning, and I came back to life again. It was like I just didn't realize how much of a part of these horses are to my life, and I haven't even been around them. And one morning I got on a pony, and I thought, wow, everything came back in color, So that was kind of the turning point to where I thought, I'm going to start getting on horses again. So I ended up working for Bob Baffert, working horses for him, which I had connections with him from the past, working with Silver Charm and other really good horses that I rode, actually worked with him. And then I ended up riding actually quite a few races for him back in Kentucky and stuff. So anyway, so then, I started working with Baffert and working horses at that point with no riding intentions in my mind, thinking I couldn't do it and shouldn't. And finally, I guess I came to a point where, I feel better now than I did before, and why shouldn't I start riding races again? So off I went, and the first race I rode back after 7 years, I was on a horse for a guy named Joe Herrick, and he was 32-1, and I finished second. He ran a hell of a race. So ended up winning my first race back after the 7 years at Hollywood Park for a good friend of mine named Bob Leonard, and the horse paid $156. So,
wow.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting.
Joe, did you go to the doctor before you, just curious, did you go to the doctor to see if it were a smart idea, I suppose, to return to riding before you actually
did?
Well,
yeah, I did. I had to get approved to come back and ride, obviously, because otherwise they're not going to let you come back. But, right. The doctors said they wouldn't advise it. You take a spill, you could, be really hurt bad. But that's, for me, it's just like thinking about driving down a road, and it's like in Kentucky, those streets are so tight, and somebody makes a little swerve and you're out of here. So I don't think like that. I don't think anything's going to happen. You just say your prayers and follow your passion. And that's what I'm doing.
I have to tell you a quick story, Joe. Coming up here in maybe a couple of weeks, it will have been 2 years since I retired, And so I can completely relate to everything you're saying and how much you miss it when you can't do it. And yeah. I was told not to ride. I have had my hip replaced. And I was telling my mother the other day that I was interviewing you and told her a little bit about your story, how you came back after 7 years. She turned white. She said, "Oh, no, please don't get any ideas."
Yeah, I know. Like I said, most of the average person would say, "What, are you crazy?" You know, you can get killed out there, you know. But for me, I just don't think like that. I never have. So it's my passion. And for now, I love it. I have no fear. And I feel like I have a good few years ahead of me. I'm not sure how long I want to ride. I'm just going to go with my gut and my heart, you know. Could be 5, could be 10. I don't know, but
I've always,
for me, I mean, it's for a rider like you or anybody else, like Gary Stevens, he did the same. He was out for 7-8 years and came back, and he's back on his game again. So, I mean, and he's had knee replacements, and you've had hip replacements. So, I know it's a lot to think about when you have done what we've done, and you know the feeling that we have. But I mean, as long as I have a horse to be around and get on, I'm pretty happy.
You love it, you love it. Yeah. And as I said in the intro, your story is what they make movies out of, Joe. And so I said briefly, you have actually been in a major motion picture, and it's an incredible story and goes back to your family history. So tell us about that.
Well, the funny thing was, you know, as growing up, my mom had a cabinet with a, you know, the glass front, and there was a picture in there of my mom around 6 or 7 years old sitting on the lap of Shirley Temple, who was around 25 years old at the time. And I asked her, what is this picture? And she said, well, they made a movie called Seabiscuit, and your grandfather, my grandfather, was a stunt rider and did some little acting bits in that Seabiscuit movie. And on the off time of this movie, Shirley Temple used to babysit my mom. So that was kind of a funny thing, you know, back then. Now the new Seabiscuit came out, and the book was out first, obviously, by Laura Hillebrand. And I ended up reading the book, and I thought, wow, this is a great story, a really, really good book. So I couldn't put it down. I read the whole thing, and I said, this is amazing. Now I hear they're going to make a movie. And my mom said, well, you should see if you can get in that. Wouldn't that be amazing? And I thought, well, yeah, it would be. And funny thing was, probably like 2 days later, Chris McCarron came walking in the jocks room with the producer of the Seabiscuit movie. And he said, you know what? I actually asked him, I said, I'd really like to be in that. And he goes, I got a perfect place for you. I got a perfect position and a perfect spot. And I said, great. And there it was. And it's from there, I ended up being Gary Stevens' double. In the match race scenes, I did the morning workout scenes on Seabiscuit. I did a lot of extra scenes in the movie at the time. Also, and at that point, I was riding at Hollywood Park. So it was kind of like a lot going on and not really realizing what a big feature that would be, because I've been in a lot of little things, but nothing like Seabiscuit. So that was a lot of fun. We had a blast back there in Kentucky doing the match race scene at Keeneland, and it was supposed to be Pimlico, and it was ice cold back there, and just a great experience.
What an awesome story, Joe. I'm going to go watch that movie tonight, and I'm going to look at it differently now, knowing you were in that and the story surrounding that. That is so cool.
Yeah, I know. It was really a great experience for everybody who got to be in that at the time. And Gary wasn't riding at the time, and he was just, I mean, he was just amazing. He did such a great acting job, and Chris McCarron coordinated the whole thing, and he would get the riders together, and we'd have little plastic animals and horses and little things, and he'd put them on the ground and kind of play out the race or the scene that we were making, and we go over it, and then we go out on the track and we get it first, the first shot. You know, and a lot of times in these movies, they'll do them 10 times and can't seem to get them right. But everything just went so smoothly, and he knew what riders would fit, what horses, and he just had it all coordinated like a dance instructor. It was amazing.
Wow. I think Chris still has one of the horses out at his farm that they used for Seabiscuit. I could be wrong, but that was many years ago he told me that. But that is a fantastic story. And we're here with jockey Joe Steiner joining me on Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka, here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Joe, when we spoke on the phone a couple days ago, you told me you were on a car trip to, I believe it was San Diego, and you had your very young son with you, and you were taking him on his first road trip. Tell us about your family.
Okay. Well, I am married to a woman from Germany. Her name is Dagmar Geleitner Steiner. She's an artist. We've been together for 5 years now, and married for a couple of years. But we had a son this last year. He's 6 months old now. His name is Jonah Michael Joseph, and just the cutest little guy. So we actually, after the season of Seattle, where I rode at Emerald Downs this last season, I rode at Golden Gate for a little while, like a month, and then we took a trip over to Germany to visit her family and just spend time with them and enjoy the lower, in Bavaria, which is lower Germany, and just beautiful, beautiful country. So, and as I said, was now once we got back over here, we've now taken a road trip down to from Seattle down to, we're in Santa Anita right now, and Dagmar is going to paint Beholder for Del Mar Racetrack. Because as each horse wins the Pacific Classic at Del Mar, they're immortalized by a painting on the wall down there. And she was picked last year by Joe Harper and to paint Shared Belief. So then, and this year came along, this last summer, they chose her again to paint Beholder. So we're down here taking pictures of her, and she will, you know, she wants to get to know her character and, you know, get a feel of her. Not others. She doesn't just paint them. She wants to get to know their character a little bit and get a feel of all that and get to know Richard Mandel a little bit and Gary Stevens and that whole thing. So, you know, and just kind of figure out how she wants to design that for this next painting that she's doing. So,
wow.
Which is exciting.
That is incredibly exciting. And she's also done some work with old friends before, yes?
Oh yeah, and that's another thing that brought us together in the first place is she's all about horse welfare and, you know, where they end up, and I've always been. So the funny thing was there was a horse that I won the Golden Gate Derby on for Bob Baffert. His name was Dan the Bluegrass Man, and Dan the Bluegrass Man ended up at Old Friends, and I went out to visit him. 1 year, Michael Blowen had called me up, "You got to come out and see this horse." And while I was in Kentucky, I went over and saw him. And as it turned out, once I met Dagmar, she was very connected with them also. So it's kind of been a hand in a glove fit for us in a lot of ways. So
surreal. That is a great story. How this all brought you both together. And Joe, what if your son decides he wants to become a jockey, what would you tell him?
That's all up to him, because, you know, if he feels like that would be something that he would want to do, I'll support him no matter what he wants to do. But I got a feeling he's going to get too big, because he's already big. he's already 20 pounds, and he's just growing. So I got a feeling he's going to be too big, but I know whatever direction he wants to go, I will support him. That's all. And I'll never discourage him and anything other than a stupid move. But I mean, if that's his passion, then this is what it's all about in life.
So well said. So, and already too big at 6 months. Well, you never know. You never know.
Maybe. No, I could tell he's gonna grow. I think he's gonna grow. But, you know, like I said, if he does, whatever direction he goes, if he wants to go, you know, it's, I think, just supporting him in life. That's all I want to do. So.
Well, you're a little bit tall yourself, Joe. Was it difficult for you during the years to make weight?
Oh, yeah. No, I'm 5'5", taller than most of the guys, because a lot of the guys are like probably an average of 5'2". For me, yeah, I've battled my weight through the years, and like I've told, I had an article written in Seattle. Before I was injured, I was battling bulimia, and that was just a tough, vicious circle. And I read books on it. I read two books, and I just couldn't quit doing it. And it was just a horrible habit. And it wasn't until after I quit racing for that period of time that I learned how to eat correctly. And it's, you know, and it seems easy for the average person, but eating correctly isn't easy for a jockey when you have to keep your weight down and you're battling it. So
what's the key? What's the key now, Joe, to keeping your weight down? What's your typical meal plan?
You know what? Now actually I eat instead of not eating. And that was the biggest thing, is when you starve yourself, it's actually worse on your system. So actually eating like a small breakfast, having a little bit of lunch and having a nice dinner. Smiling on not big portions. I don't like eat a lot, but I eat smaller, medium portions, but I always eat. I always keep my system going. And whereas before I was more starving myself, which made it more of a battle, and it's ongoing.
It can be quite torturous at times. I can relate to that very, very well, Joe. And we only have about a minute left. This time just flies by. I can't believe we're almost out of time already.
We need another hour.
I agree completely. I think you should come back again. But okay. Real quick, Joe, in about a minute, I thought it was very interesting to hear that you worked a horse we're all very familiar with from the Bob Baffert barn. Tell us about that real quickly.
Oh, Silver Charm?
I'm talking about American Pharoah, actually. Us about both, maybe.
American Pharoah. I just worked him one day this last, before the Derby. Martin Garcia works him all the time, but this one day he was out of town. So I had the chance to work him one day. And Bob asked me when I came back, what do you think of him? What do you think of him? I said, well, he's just another great horse in your barn, because he has so many good horses. I mean, it is. And he was... He just was fortunate enough to just go on and make all the right moves. And I believe it's Bob's experience in those races that, you know, that kept him together and kept him in the right place throughout that whole tough, grueling Triple Crown run there. I mean, it's just so hard. So there's been a lot of great horses come along and so many close finishes, but everything has to go right. And he did everything right. Obviously he had the talent, but he was managed perfectly. So
did you think he could do that when you sat aboard him?
Oh no, I didn't. But I actually you know, I didn't think Silver Charm was as great as he was till he won the Derby. And you know, once they get their confidence up, then you think they can do anything. Then you think they're unbeatable, and then they can still get beat. So, you know, I've just seen so many great horses not get there. You just hope for it all, but like I said, everything has to be so right, and the stars have to be in alignment, and everything has to be so right, because it's so many things can go wrong. And that's the great thing about this game. That's what keeps us all coming back, because we're always looking for that one horse that can take us somewhere, and these horses, they make us.
Joe, thank you so much for joining us.
Absolutely. It's an honor to be here.
Join me next Tuesday at 6 o'clock Eastern Time with another edition of Jock Talk, presented by Tito's Handmade Vodka. I'm Christina McManigal. Thanks for listening.